You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
They showed off their talents in Indianapolis. Now, they enter the city of brotherly love and find out where the next big fantasy football stars will call home. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network presents live coverage of the 2017 NFL Draft. The fantasy executive, Corey Parson, and team FNTSY are on the clock.
It seems like it was only a couple weeks ago when we were sitting in this same position talking about these college athletes as they begin their quest to the NFL. That was the NFL Combine Show, those special editions, Fantasy Football Frenzy. Now we are back for night two of the NFL Draft, coming to you live from Studio 34 in Midtown Manhattan. A lovely night, a lot of action going on, but the action is really going on in the city of brotherly love, where dreams are becoming realities. Tonight, I'm Corey Parson, the fantasy executive, and I got with me two of the top minds in football. Let me introduce him to you right now. That is my guy from GoFor2.com. It is Joe Lisi. Joe, my man, here we are, day two. Dreams are being made. And so far, the draft has already kicked off. We are into the second round, and some interesting things starting to take shape already.
It is, Corey. It's an electric atmosphere here. I mean, day two and day three are where NFL teams build their rosters. Some interesting picks already. Dalvin Cook going to Minnesota. A lot to talk about on day number two, but I can't wait.
We also have another gentleman who is a scholarly mind when it comes to the sport of football. He is from Campus Insiders. That is my man, Rich Sermonello. Rich, what's going on, buddy? I'm one for one on the last name.
Yeah, actually, I'm very impressed. I think that bodes well for all of your alma maters that you could pull that off.
It's been a couple mix in there. Rich, let me tell you something. We was listening to the update just now, and I want to talk about this right quick. We was listening to the update right now on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. My guy Dan Stafford does a good job with this. Last night, we saw three quarterbacks go. Oh, four in the first round. Because our three quarterbacks going to top 12 picks a day. All of the head coaches and general managers come out and say, these guys are not starting quarterbacks. These guys are guys that are going to be developed. In the case of Trubisky, I agree. In the case of a guy like Mahomes, I agree. In the case of Deshaun Watson, I disagree.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. I think if there is an NFL-ready on day one, and that's very rare. I don't want to put too much pressure on Deshaun Watson, but if you look at him over the past 3 years, guys, so poised on the biggest stage, tremendously confident, cerebral quarterback. He's versatile. He's a passing quarterback, but he could also make plays outside of the pocket. I thought Houston was going to be a good fit all along. I think Deshaun really had a nice sort of chemistry with that staff and the players. I think that's an organization where he can flourish very early in his career.
If he gets the opportunity now, Joe, we are across the street from Madison Square Garden, the world's most famous arena, also home of the god-awful New York Knickerbockers. Joe, Phil Jackson is insisting on running this triangle. Bill O'Brien, the head coach / quarterback guru for the Houston Texans, he's known as a guy that puts a system in place. System can be kind of difficult for young players to catch on to. Scrap the system and do what the young man does best, correct? Or is that an outdated theory?
No, I think that's a great point. I think when you draft college players, especially when you're looking at quarterbacks on the next level, you really have to pick a system that really challenges their strengths and goes away from their weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned a great point about Bill O'Brien. When he was at Penn State, he had an immobile quarterback in Christian Hackenberg, ready pro-style quarterback with the Jets. Deshaun Watson is an athletic quarterback. You can roll him out outside the pocket, and I think that's where he'll have his greatest success in the 2017 season.
So we are off. We are rock and rolling. When we come back on the other side, we're going to update you, give you some of the picks that have gone off the board. We are already into round two of the NFL draft. One of the big ones that we have to talk about for our fantasy football audience is the guy that went with the ninth pick in the second round. That's Florida State running back Dalvin Cook drops in this draft. when we were talking about Cook Rich a few months ago, we looked at him as he was going to be a player that was going to be drafted pretty high in the first round, going to be the type of guy that can be a franchise running back, a three-down back. Now here he goes into a situation where he'll be splitting carries with Latavius Murray. So we are coming up on the final minute before we got to get out to the break. When Rich, when we come back, I'll toss that question out to you. We'll go through some of the other picks going down in the first round. Also, gentlemen, I want to get your takes of some of the action that took place last night in round one. We had a good time in here last night, broadcasting live from Rockin' Raleigh's. Plan on doing the same thing once again tonight. So we are up and at 'em, rocking and rolling. It is the Fantasy Football Frenzy NFL Draft Special Edition Night 2. We did it last night. We're right back at you tonight, giving you instant analysis on the NFL Draft 2017. Dreams are being made. We'll talk about it right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. When we come back, we start to take our first look at the second round of the NFL Draft. Back at it, Rockin' Raleigh's Midtown Manhattan, night two of the NFL Draft. We got players coming off the board. We are taking you all the way up to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, talking a little NFL, talking some fantasy football. I got two bright minds when it comes to the sport that we call football, America's passion. Baseball may be America's pastime, but the NFL is America's passion. Before we went out to the break, Rich, was talking about the combine and how we felt about Dalvin Cook. Obviously didn't do too well at the combine. I didn't think he would drop all the way out the first round, though.
No, I mean, this is the most shocking drop of all. I think he is a top 15 talent, guys. I think he's right up there with Leonard Fournette in terms of productivity, explosiveness at the next level. I love watching this kid play. I mean, he's a violent runner. Once he gets to the second level, he'll take off. He took over games throughout his career. The only thing I could imagine, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, is it has to be non-football related. It's got to be his shoulders. It could be some off-field concerns. But him being taken this late, that is not commensurate with what his talent is.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, when I look at Dalvin Cook overall, I had him ranked second right behind Leonard Fournette. I think the biggest question mark about Dalvin Cook is what type of offense is he going to go to be productive. I could see an offense like New England where you put him out in the slot, and another offense like New Orleans where you're going to get him matched on one-on-one nickelbacks and linebackers in the short to intermediate passing game. He did have some fumble issues. That's a concern. He had some fumble issues in 2014 when they lost that game to Oregon. He fumbled week number one against Ole Miss, dropped some easy passes, running into the end zone, dropped the football. So he had some of those type of moments last year. But outside of that, he should be a top 10 pick, in my opinion. So I agree with Rich. The only thing I can think about is that it is off the field issues that he did have in 2014. But those who were supposed to be in the back seat, we'll see what happens this coming season.
Obviously, as we move to the night, we will be discussing off the field issues. As we obviously at some point tonight, I do expect us to see Joe Mixon go off the board. Now, we had Dr. A from Inside Injuries on with us earlier this morning, okay, right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and he was talking about some medical red flags of the gentleman coming in this year. And when he talked about Dalvin Cook, now listen, Dr. A is not a college football guy. Right. He's a doctor. You feel what I'm saying?
Right.
He can tell him what the injury is. He'll break it down for you. He was talking about Cook has horrible shoulders. Like, his shoulders have been through everything. And he said, not knowing Dalvin Cook from a can of paint, he said, what the problem with the shoulders, it means when he runs through the line, if he gets hit, he's going to fumble. And I was like, well, there you go right there.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, when you look at that and Dalvin Cook, he's not a tough between the tackles runner. That doesn't mean he can't run between the tackles. Yeah. I mean, he can pound it, but can he pound it like Leonard Fournette 30, 35 times a game like a beast mode?
Yeah.
I'm not so sure about that. That's the one part of his game where you need to get him in space out on the perimeter like a Dante Foreman, get him out on the outside where he can utilize his speed. If you need an inside runner, Dalvin Cook's not your guy.
No, so there you go right there. So, Rich, what do you think? Yesterday, Give me a synopsis of some of your takes from the first round of the NFL draft. Some of the things you thought were awkward. It looks like John Lynch won the night in his first night working. You feel what I'm saying? Yep. How cool is that? He comes right into the right out the booth, and he's hoodwinking the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big winner's got to be the Niners. I mean, no one, I think, in this entire draft is going to improve their defense better than San Francisco did on the first night. I had said throughout this process that if you look ahead 5-7 years from now, I think Solomon Thomas could be one of the 4 or 5 best pros at that particular time. Very clean prospect, very versatile as a defensive lineman, motor that won't quit. And then on the back end, you get Reuben Foster, similar to Dalvin Cook. You know, there's some off-field concerns, but if you just look at the tape, if you look at his productivity at Alabama, what he could bring to a defense, a Ray Lewis type of a player at the second level, you have two potential Pro Bowlers in the first round of this draft.
There you go right there. Joe, what do you think? Last night, some of your observations and takes away from the first night of the NFL draft.
Yeah, I think San Francisco clearly won with Reuben Foster. I mean, to get a top 10 player, top 5 player, I mean, best defensive linebacker in this draft, the physicality, plays the game with an intensity. I mean, but John Lynch is a former player. Yeah. He understands how to build teams from the inside out. You do it on the defensive side of the ball. Solomon Thomas, he's a blue-collar guy from Stanford, solid in run support, brings an edge to that defense that they need immensely because they lost Patrick Willis a few years ago. Once they lost Patrick Willis, the heart and soul of that team was gone, and they haven't been the same since defensively. But again, two great picks. The one question mark I have out of the whole first round was how Patrick Mahomes went to KC in that pick. I mean, the fact that he went where he went and to the team that he went, question marks all around.
You didn't like the move.
I mean, he's a project quarterback, great size, great arm, put up 5,000 yards at Texas Tech, but he has problems and weaknesses that will be exploited in the next level in the NFL, and he clearly is not a day one starter. And more importantly, he does not fit the mold of what KC has with Alex Smith. I mean, they
he's completely opposite.
Exactly. So, and Andy Reid wants a smart quarterback. He doesn't want a gambler that's going to really put the team in terms of turnover issues at a disadvantage for his defense, and that's not what Patrick Mahomes is.
Yeah, Rich, I tell you, I think that was the first thing that came to mind. Like, well, this is not, nobody throws the football out of bounds like Alex Smith, you know, point blank period. They go out there and they draft the exact opposite of guy that's going to wing it, throw it in the tight spots, not even care about it. Listen, I know they say, well, he has the swag, he has the bravado, he has the confidence. You cannot turn the football over at the next level. Or any
maybe
level.
if there's a yin and yang and you can combine those two characteristics of the quarterbacks, maybe you have yourself a top-notch quarterback. Listen, I think that Patrick Mahomes is a worthwhile developmental prospect, but not at the number 10 pick overall. Couldn't agree more with Joe. Lots of arm talent, lots of swagger, does a lot of nice things from an improvisational standpoint. He completes passes on the move. Fun to watch. He's not a system quarterback. That's what I've tried to tell people. This is not your typical air raid Cliff Kingsbury quarterback. He could play at the next level. But boy, number 10 overall just shocked me. I think that is far too high for this kind of a developmental prospect.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, the fact that Andy Reid is a quarterback mentor, and the quarterbacks that he has mentored in college, you know, the transition from college to the pros, Patrick Mahomes is the furthest thing from a pro-style quarterback in this draft. Even though he's not a system quarterback, the weaknesses that he has, like he throws the football against the grain, against his body, you cannot get away with that in the NFL with the speed of the linebackers and the defensive backs. He's not going to make those type of throws in the NFL and have success. So he needs to change that immediately. And I just don't think of that. It's a quick fix. I think we're going to be talking about Patrick Mahomes 2-3 years down the road at the same type of issues. And one more thing is that Kansas City drafted a pro-style quarterback a couple of years ago that really fit Andy Reid's system in Aaron Murray. And they never allowed him a chance to develop or even challenge Alex Smith. He has more upside, in my opinion, than Patrick Patrick Mahomes does in that system. So it's an intriguing atmosphere in KC, and we'll see how it plays out in 2 or 3 years from now.
We're having a good time already, rocking and rolling right here at the Fantasy Football Friends, the NFL Draft Special Edition, Night 2, Joe Lisi, Rich Sermonello. Rich, the Packers started out the second round of the NFL Draft. They take the cornerback out of Washington, 6'3", 200-pound. The first pick of the second round is Kevin King.
Mm. Yeah, to me, what is so fascinating, why I have always loved the NFL draft, you know, Joe and I, we've been following these kids since they were in high school and then obviously through their college careers. Was there anybody on the planet, Joe, who thought that of the Washington DBs, not Sidney Jones, not Buda Baker, but it's Kevin King, who was the first Husky defensive back who was drafted? Nobody could have predicted that. This is based largely on measurables. Don't want to discount his talent, but this is a kid who's 6'3", 200 pounds, great leaper. I think there's a lot of potential, but raw. I think at the end of the day, Sidney Jones is the first-round quarterback, first-round caliber quarterback, cornerback, but obviously has the Achilles issue. He's going to get better. He's going to kind of shake off the rust. It's a fascinating pick at the beginning of the second round.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and we see the repercussions of the NFL Combine and Pro Days. Everybody's sabermetric now, so that all they look at is the measurables, and they don't look at the tape and watch these players play in Power 5 conferences. I couldn't agree more with that. I think Kevin King is a reach, especially first pick in the second round. Clear reach by Green Bay.
After that pick, the Jaguars select Cam Robinson, offensive tackle. Then the Seahawks go with Malik McDowell, defensive tackle. The Arizona Cardinals select Buda Baker, that safety, out of Washington. And then the Buffalo Bills finally get another wide receiver. I didn't think they were going to go into the season with Philly Brown and Andre Ward. And a banged up Sammy Watkins. We'll let you know who that receiver is when we come back on the other side. The Buffalo Bills have drafted a wide receiver in the second round. We'll get the breakdown right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Sammy Watkins can't stay on the field. Robert Woods is not on the team no more. The Buffalo Bills need a lot of help at the wide receiver position. They need some pieces for Tyrod Taylor to deliver the ball to. Rick Dennison is the new new offensive coordinator in Buffalo. Not really too familiar with his scheme or with his fit, but I do think they want to start to throw the football a little bit more. Cardale Jones is the backup quarterback. They finally decided that they would go ahead and go with Tyrod Taylor. I don't know why they had to think against Tyrod Taylor in the first place. So they draft East Carolina wide receiver Zay Jones. Rich, last season he had 216 targets. That's amazing.
Yeah, what amazes me about Zay Jones, two things to keep in mind. Number one, despite the fact that everyone in Dowdy Ficklin Stadium or whenever ECU was on the road knew that he was the target of those mediocre pirate quarterbacks, he remained unstoppable. The reason why, outstanding ball skills, runs the tree very cleanly, runs great routes. And then the second thing is, you know, you wonder when a kid is, you know, in the AAC playing against not Power 5 competition, can he deliver against quality opponents? He goes to the Senior Bowl, had a chance to talk to Phil Savage, really shined, really stood out as somebody who was not just the product of lesser competition. Big time pro. I think he's a number one receiver. What he did in college, Corey, I think continues on Sundays.
Joe, the player comp is Anquan Boldin, right?
Yeah.
But they say can't separate consistently, and he doesn't give the quarterback enough cushion to place the football.
Well, that's it. He struggles in bump and run coverage, so that's going to be where he, at the next level, needs to work on. But he is a talent. He's 6'2", about 200 pounds. You look at, he's the NCAA leader in terms of all-time receptions in terms of last season. Yep. So East Carolina plays five wide. They play with a wide-open attack. They challenge defenses. But he's a bigger version of Justin Hardy that came out for Atlanta a couple of years ago. Justin Hardy doesn't have as big of a frame as Zay Jones does. He's a bigger, more physical receiver, and I think that'll help him on the next level. I think it's a quality pick. I mean, I think this draft right today is deep with second and third round wide receivers, but they got themselves a productive wide receiver. He's not a comparison, in my opinion, to Anquan Boldin because of body size.
Okay.
He needs to add about another 20 to 30 pounds of muscle to be as physical at the point of attack to break bump and run coverage like Anquan Boldin. He's not there in terms of his game yet, but he is a smooth route runner that will have success at the next level.
With the sixth pick, you know what I was about to say. With the sixth pick, the Los Angeles Chargers new head coach Anthony Lynn. You know what Anthony Lynn is famous for? Ground and pound, running the football, establishing the run game. They go out and get an offensive lineman, Rich, from Western Kentucky, a guard, Forrest Lamp, 6'4", 309 pounds. They got to put him on a diet or something.
Yeah. Now, Forrest Lamp played tackle for the Hilltoppers. He's going to move to guard. He's got kind of short arms. That's been the knock on him over the past couple of months. But again, if you look at him on film, he not only did it against Conference USA competition, but watch what he did against Alabama. That was the toughest opponent that he has played or had played during his college career, and he excelled. I think just in terms of fundamentals, guys, technician, he might be the cleanest blocker. I'm not saying he's going to be the best. I'm not saying he's going to be Garrett Bowles necessarily, but a very clean technician, can also play some center, so there's some versatility there as well.
Yeah, from what I like about Forrest Lamp is that he played in an up-tempo attack in Western Kentucky. They rushed for 186 yards on the ground last year, had a great running back in Anthony Wells, but he got stronger as the game progressed, and that's the one thing when you look at the NFL level. He can make the transition because as games get difficult, he had a great conditioning and he can still add. He's 6'4", 309. He can still add 10 to 15 pounds of muscle and not lose any footwork or speed. I think it's a great pick. He's moving a guard, but this is a guy that plays with a mean streak, and I think it's a solid pick for the Chargers in a running offense for what they have.
I was intrigued yesterday when they added Mike Williams, and I'm like, well, are they saying that, you know what, we don't know what we have if Keenan Allen is ever going to be healthy? You know, also got the kid Tyrell Williams out there. Now they bring in Mike Williams. Phil Rivers gets another piece. Yep. Anthony Lynn, nice offensive mind. I think Mr. Williams might have ended up in a good spot, but I
agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, Phil Rivers likes to be a bit of a mad bomber at times. Mm-hmm. Mike Williams does a tremendous job. Not the fastest prospect that we're going to talk about tonight or talked about last night, but he has such a great body type, big, strong hands, will go up high to pull the ball out of the air. He's a real weapon on deep routes. I think that combination, again, not a speedster. We're not talking Corey Davis. We're not talking John Ross. But Philip Rivers to Mike Williams, I think that's something we're going to hear about quite a bit over the next couple of seasons.
Yeah. No, but it's got to be only about 3 years or so because Phil Rivers is getting up there.
Yeah, he's 40. Yeah. He's an old man.
Yeah. You know, he got like 12 kids.
I don't know about the kids, but I know he likes to break out the flannel. So that's why.
So, Joe, now, next up we have the New York Jets. They go right back, attack that secondary again, start to put some pieces in place in that defense. Florida safety Marcus May. What's the breakdown on Mr. May?
Yeah, I like May. I mean, you look at his game, I mean, a little bit rigid. I mean, he's not a guy like Jarrell Adams that's going to move sideline to sideline, but in taking away the deep third of the field, he does an excellent job, comes up in run support as well. I think what Todd Bowles is building here is he wants defense first. He realizes that in order to win games in terms of the offensive limitations, he needs to stack that defense in order to force teams to get off the field. If he cannot do that, they're not going to have success. Marcus May is a solid player. Again, is he a Jarrell Adams type of player? No. He's a solid player that can take away the deep field. He plays man coverage very well. Could also play nickel. I like the pick here. I like what he's done in the first two picks with Adams and May. Solid SEC player.
I'm very happy for the young man, but I have to bring up some of the negatives, Rich. They say he tends to lose track of receivers when tracking the ball in the air. That can be a situation in the safety where you can give up a lot of big plays if that cannot get corrected, or if that's even true.
You can survive with those types of skills against SEC passers who have been mediocre over the past couple of seasons. Obviously, at the NFL level, that's not going to cut it. The pick surprises me. Not that I'm down on Marcus May, but after you get Adams, which was, I thought, just fell in the lap of the Jets, clearly one of the three or four best players in the draft, top defender, but then you go back to safety. It's very curious to me. This is an organization that has so many needs, an aging offensive line, not enough weapons on offense, don't know if they're going to try to address the quarterback position once again, and yet they go back-to-back safety. Very strange.
Up next on the clock in the second round of the NFL draft, the Carolina Panthers select wide receiver from Ohio State, 5'11", 196, so he's not one of these big dinosaurs like the guys they have out there now. His name is Curtis Samuel. Joe, I'm not really familiar with Curtis Samuel's game, to be honest with you.
Nah, he's a playmaker. I mean, he led the team in receptions, him and Noah Brown last year. But, I mean, again, he's like a Jalen Marshall type of player. Same type of, he took over for Jalen Marshall. But again, when you look at his game overall, in terms of physicality, he's 5'11", about 200 pounds. I don't like the pick here for Carolina. I know they've had success with Ted Ginn, more of a marginal type of player. He's a productive player. You're not sure what you're going to get out of Ted Ginn each and every week. Curtis Samuel, I think he's a project. I really do. I don't think he's a smooth route runner, and I think you could have picked him up in the later rounds. The reason why they grabbed him where they did is because of his speed. He's a 4.3, 4.4 type of guy, and they want him out in space, so that's why they took him.
Rich, got some breaking.
If I could jump in. Yeah, I mean, the one thing that's kind of curious is, and I know where you're going breaking. I don't want to kill the lead here, but McCaffrey first, Samuel second. Very somewhat similar players, aren't they?
Yep, I was going to... Can Mike Shula scheme him up, though?
Yeah, Mike Shula is an excellent offensive coordinator. I mean, again, it's what's going to be the offensive mentality going forward. They had Jonathan Stewart there. That Jonathan Stewart was not like these two players here. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jonathan Stewart was a physical runner between the tackles in his days at Oregon, but on the perimeter could take it to the house. But he was a bigger back. These are scat backs, so to speak. Even yep. Christian McCaffrey, you got to get him out in space. I mean, size-wise, we're talking about smaller players than what they have in Jonathan Stewart. So, it's curious to see how Mike Shula utilizes him.
Okay, and definitely, I want to get back to the Christian McCaffrey conversation because you mentioned something that I do want to bring up. But we do have breaking news: with the 16th pick in the second round, the Cincinnati Bengals have selected Oklahoma running back Joe Mixon. So here we go, right here, Rich, the controversial player with the video, domestic violence. Everybody was saying that the Cincinnati Bengals would be a team that they could see taking a shot on him. They have Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill. Mediocre. Now they bring in Joe Mixon.
You know, do you want to talk about the football player or do you want to talk about the decision? I mean, clearly, the football player is a first round talent, yep. Unquestionable. If you look at his size, 6'1, 215, 220, and north, 225 at times during the season, he's physical. He's got good hands, the hands you want at the NFL level, athletic back. Obviously, listen, I had said throughout the season, Joe and I had a lot of discussions about this. Paid the price. Oklahoma did what they thought was necessary. Kid deserves his shot. So he goes in the second round. This kind of a decision by the Bengals had to have been signed off by Mike Brown. I think because of how toxic this kid is and because of how abhorrent that video is, Mike Brown, the owner of the Bengals, had to sign off on this because you know it's going to be somewhat of a PR disaster for the Bengals.
That's what we're looking at right here.
Yeah, football player-wise, Joe Mixon could take it to the house. He is a playmaker, legitimately, especially what he does in the short to intermediate passing game. I mean, he has great hands. If you want to put him out in the slot, you could utilize him like a Reggie Bush or even a Christian McCaffrey type of player. He's going to struggle. The one area of weakness is probably pass blocking. They utilize Samaje Perine and Joe Mixon in the backfield at the same time to protect Baker Mayfield. But again, as a football player, he is a number one talent for what he possesses. Again, it's the off the field issues, but then again, Cincinnati did play well. They turned around Pac-Man Jones's game and they took a shot on him and they reaped the reward. So, I mean, Joe Mixon is the same type of player.
You know, we're going to see what happens. I want to be getting ready to come up on a next time out, but I want to get in and discuss, try to figure out what exactly it is that the Cincinnati Bengals are trying to do here right now. We saw the pick last night that I was like, whoa, with John Ross. You know, they got AJ Green, Giovanni Bernard still in the mix, Jeremy Hill still there, Tyler Eifert can't really seem to stay on the field, but still, when he's there, they wouldn't trade AJ McCarron, which I'm like, why not? You know what I'm saying? But the Red Rifle, they lost a couple offensive linemen. Seems like, I don't know what direction they're really going in here. We'll continue to follow the coverage. I want to talk about Joe Mixon, and then we'll still get into our discussion about Christian McCaffrey. Rocking and rolling right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Night 2 of the NFL Draft, Fantasy Football NFL Draft Special. Coming right back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
If you've heard...
Getting through the second round of the NFL Draft, want to jump right back in. No, we left off. We were talking about Curtis Samuel going to the Carolina Panthers. Dan Dalvin Cook goes to the Vikings. Marcus Williams goes to the Saints. Sidney Jones goes to the Eagles. Play I want to talk about, Gerald Everett, tight end from South Alabama, goes to the Rams. Adam Shaheen, tight end, goes to the Bears. Quincy Wilson goes to Indianapolis Colts. Tyus Bowser goes to the Ravens. Joe Mixon goes to the Vikings. We spoke about that. Ryan Anderson goes to Washington. Outside linebacker from Alabama. And the latest pick was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers selecting Texas A&M safety Justin Evans. So, what, Rich, I'll start with you. What are the Cincinnati Bengals? It's like, I hate to say this, but I said it this morning, but The mediocrity in Cincinnati's organization is abysmal. So every year you get a home playoff game and you lose, that's not good enough. You make the fans come sit in that cold ass stadium in the dead of January and to see you lose playoff games. Obviously we know the talent of Mixon. They get Ross last night, but it just seems like it's so many moving pieces, almost like the offense is helter skelter. And Andy Dalton is mediocre too.
Yeah, and you know what? All of that mediocre quarterback play, Corey, I do think gets a boost from a Mixon and a Ross. I mean, Ross, obviously, we know what he did at the Combine, 4.22, fastest ever recorded, beats out Chris Johnson. Mixon, we just discussed what his on-field capabilities are. So if you are an Andy Dalton or an A.J. McCarron, you're a mediocre quarterback, but it does take you up just a notch higher to be able to get the ball in the hands of that caliber of talent along with AJ Green. Those average quarterbacks, I think, got just a wee bit better over the past 24 hours.
When you look at the pieces they have, Joe, in the backfield already with Hill, excellent nose for the goal line is one thing I like about him. Giovanni Bernard, you know his pass catching prowess. Now you put Joe Mixon in the mix. Now I'm like, okay, so is this a lead dog situation somewhere? Is there a committee going on? How do you think they figure out these pieces with these three backs? They still got to get the football to AJ Green too.
They do, and I think what you're seeing is it's a copycat league. I mean, you know, we saw the success of Atlanta and Matt Ryan with Dante Foreman and Tevin Coleman. Freeman and Coleman. And you're seeing that now play out with even New York getting Evan Ingram. The more weapons you have on your offense can only help them put more pressure in terms of causing mismatches. So they have three running backs. You'll probably have Jeremy Hill running on first or second down, and then third down it'll be Mixon. But then as the season progresses, they'll go with the hot hand. So I don't think Joe Mixon comes into the situation because of Jeremy Hill's success between the tackles and becomes the clear day one starter. But as week number 8 and number 9 progress, as long as he's healthy, he's going to get worked into that offense more and more and more. And then you might see him in the flat. You might see him in a slot formation as they make a playoff run. I'll say this. I agree with you about Andy Dalton, but I think the best quarterback on that roster is, in fact, AJ McCarron.
No, so you're all McCarron.
I love McCarron. Yeah. I think he's a winner, and I think he could step up on the national stage if given the consistency and opportunity by the coaching staff. Yeah. Can't be one game, we'll take him back and start Dalton. I mean, a consistent approach and say, this is our guy.
Do you think maybe they're not trading him because they're probably thinking, well, you know what? We might want to use him as our starter.
Yeah, I think absolutely that's why they didn't trade him. I mean, you look at the playoff losses over the last couple of years by Marvin Lewis, especially last year. I mean, it was disheartening, you know. And what are you going to do? 2 years ago,
the
Steeler one. That really broke the franchise. And now he's searching for answers in terms of how do I fix it?
Yep.
He knows the defense, but he has to fix it on the offense. And the more weapons you get, the less they can double-team A.J. Green, especially in red zone opportunities, and that could either help Dalton and McCarron overall as quarterback development.
Rich, I want to slide back up. The board goes to go to picks 12 and 13. They were the Rams and the Bears. The Los Angeles Rams select South Alabama tight end Gerald Everett. This has been a pretty interesting class for tight ends.
Yeah, it sure is. I mean, it feels like it's the 1980s. I mean, when does Dave Casper go in this draft? I mean, I haven't seen depth at tight end like we're seeing this year in a very long time. And look at the small schools as well. For any kid that is lightly recruited or playing at the D2, D3, Group of Five level, Gerald Everett is sort of an H-back type of a player, more of a Jordan Reed, 6'3", 240 pounds, very athletic, out of South Alabama, former Jaguar. And Adam Shaheen played at Ashland College, very different type of player, 6'6", almost 280 pounds. I equate him to Michael Roberts at Toledo. Surprisingly athletic. Obviously, the knock is going to be, who has he played? Could he make the step up in competition? But he was lights out during the pre-draft process.
Joe, when I mentioned Gerald Everett's name, it looked like you were shaking your head about the prospect out of South Alabama.
Yeah, I think it's high for him. I mean, 44th overall. I think this is a deep, deep draft for tight end. We spoke about it on last month's show when we did it. Again, there's two types of tight ends in this draft. You have an O.J. Howard, you have a Jason Witten type, and you have a Gronk and Jimmy Graham type. Well, Everett, to me, is in that O.J. Howard mold of tight ends. Again, I think Jeremy Sprinkle is a better prospect. I think a guy with the ACL injury, like a Jake Butt, is a better prospect at this point than Gerald.
How about Jordan Leggett?
Yeah,
how about Jordan Leggett, Joe? How is Jordan Leggett not being taken at this point?
Well, that's a great point, Rich. I mean, Jordan Leggett is, to me, an athletic tight end that you could put in red zone opportunities, but I put Leggett with Bucky Hodges and Evan Ingram as that Gronk type of player that you could utilize on smaller nickelbacks and linebackers. I look at Everett as a stiff tight end he's a solid run blocker, he's athletic, but he's a project here. Mm. And why are you going to take that type of pick at 44th overall on a project when there's so much more polished tight ends in this draft that played in bigger schools? At this point, I just don't, it doesn't make sense to me.
I want to head back to the latest action going on out in Philadelphia at the NFL draft with the 52nd overall pick, the 20th pick, the Cleveland Browns. They go out and maybe possibly get their guy. They take Notre Dame quarterback DeShone Kizer. The Cleveland Brown Richards are now the property. DeShone Kizer is now the property of the Cleveland Browns. They go right back. They get their quarterback from Notre Dame, 6'4", 233. Kizer was a guy people said could have very well snuck into the first round, but now he gets a chance to go up and compete against Brock Osweiler.
I have a sneaking suspicion. It's just a guess. I think Joe and I are going to butt heads on this one. I like the trajectory of DeShone Kizer. He had a rough year last year. I think there's some maturation that needs to take place both on the field and off the field, but this is still a young quarterback. Now, listen, he's going to the worst organization in the league. That's never fun for a young quarterback. But DeShone Kizer, when I watched him thrust into the spotlight in 2015, Malik Zaire goes down with the ankle injury, I thought Kizer stepped up and showed a lot of poise. You look at that size, you mentioned it, Corey, 6'4", 233, good arm talent. I think if you're looking out to the future, he's not a year one starter, may not even be a year two starter, but I think there's a lot of upside with this kid.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one knock on Kizer was inconsistency. 62% of his passes completed in 2015. Last year, only 58%. And where was the marquee victory? I mean, Notre Dame was 4-8 overall. But I don't think right here, Corey and Rich, and I don't mind this pick here at 52nd overall. Yeah, when we were talking about DeShone Kizer, it was as an elite first-round pick up there with DeShone Watson, and I disagreed on Trubisky as well. I thought it was only Watson and everybody else. So when people were talking about Kizer in the first round, I just didn't see it. Here in the second round as a project, I don't have a problem with it because now the pressure's off. If you're going to draft a quarterback in the first round, especially top 10 pick or top 15 pick, he's got to come in on day one and be a day one starter. And I didn't see that from Kizer, but in round number two with the 52nd overall pick, when the pressure is off, I don't have a problem with it here in the second round.
All right, so here we go. Right now on rotoexperts.com, we've got our guy Jake Seeley banging out, giving you instant fantasy analysis from the second round of the NFL draft. You want that instant fantasy analysis, head on over to rotoexperts.com. Sometime in the 9 p.m. Eastern now, we'll get Jake on, chat with him, talk about a few things that's going on, touch on some of these skill position players. Rich, some of the knocks against Mr. Kizer, the sloppy footwork, the short area accuracy, not to mention the decision maker, and then especially later on in games, and they also say that he takes too many sacks.
Yeah, I think you have to be able to decide, and I'm sure the Browns, I would assume they did their homework on these topics. You know, this is still a young man. He has 2 years of college experience, just 3 years removed from high school. So I think there's an opportunity to coach him up. That's what they need to figure out. My question is less about mechanics and physicality. I'm curious. I don't know if he has the personality to be the face of a franchise. I look at a Cody Kessler. I watched him during the USC days. Cody Kessler had those types of intangibles. Not quite sure yet if he's one of those command-the-huddle type of players that the Browns are going to need him to be.
Is that something that offensive guru Joe Hugh Jackson can teach the young man, or is that something you just have to have?
Well, I think you have to have it. Mm-hmm. I think it could be taught a little bit, but it's got to be inbred.
Yeah,
and that's the one thing that I think when we look at DeShone Watson,
Kizer.
The difference is he's a winner. And you look at the situation with Notre Dame last year, there were a lot of suspensions before the year. They lose their first game to Texas, and DeShone Kizer couldn't find a way to will his team to victory with the negativity surrounding the program at that point in the season. The intangibles, the it factor, the drive to say, you know what, forget everything else, I'm going to carry the team. And that's what DeShone Watson did. So that's why when you look at it, yeah, it can be taught to a degree, but in the end, the kid's got to have it. And that's the one thing that I question with Kizer overall, and Trubisky is why I thought DeShone Watson was so far ahead of the others. Mm-hmm. Because of his ability to bounce back from adversity.
So we are starting to get a little bit deeper into the second round of the NFL draft. We're taking you up to 10 p.m. Eastern time right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Rich Sermonello. I think I might have messed it up that time. Rich Sermonello, Joe Lisi. A lot going on here in Rockin' Raleigh's. Also, if you're in the area, you're listening in your car, you got the app rolling, you want to come down, have a good time, hang out with us. We are Rockin' Raleigh's, Studio 34 in Midtown Manhattan. Before we get ready to head out to our break and start to get ready for the top of the next hour, Joe, earlier in the program, you were talking about Christian McCaffrey. You mentioned the word scat back. A lot of people came on this radio network this week and said that when you think McCaffrey's a scat back, that's a mistake, that he can be a power back.
I disagree with that. Here's a couple of reasons why. I look at 2015, the year that he broke the all-purpose record in college. Three games stand out. Week one against Northwestern, 66 yards, no touchdowns. The win over Notre Dame, 94 yards, no touchdowns. The win over Oregon, 147 yards, no touchdowns. Last year, he got shut down by Washington, who plays a very solid run defense. They shut him down between the tackles. He's, to me, a guy that needs to be out in space on one-on-one matchups. Otherwise, he's not going to have success in the NFL. But that's my opinion. We could talk about it on the back end, but that's what I feel. I don't think he's that workhorse because of his body frame. I think he'll wear down under the NFL stress each and every week.
Rich, what do you think? You agree with Joe on this one, or do you think
I do?
Okay.
No, I do. I do. I think that would be poor utilization of Christian McCaffrey if you're trying to get him yards between the he is most dangerous when he's in open space. Look at what he did on special teams. Look at what he did on short passes in the flat. He is dynamic in space. I don't know, when you look at his body type, why you would even want to use him too much between the tackles.
All right, so here we go. We are coming up on the second hour of programming right here on the network, rocking through the second round of the NFL draft. Coming up in the 9 a.m. Eastern hour, like I said, we'll head on over. Head on out to Jake Seeley from RotoExperts.com, get his opinion on some of the things that's going on from a fantasy football perspective. Got the couple tight ends that went earlier with Gerald Everett and Adam Shaheen. This Adam Shaheen, this is crazy. 6'6", 278 pounds. This, and he can catch the football? That's amazing. that's like a damn tackle right there. That's Tyron Smith. Nah, Tyron Smith's a monster, though, so let's not get carried away. Joe Mixon is off the board. He is a member of the Cincinnati Bengals. DeShone Kizer is off the board. He is a member of the Cleveland Browns. The latest pick is Tez Labor, goes to the Detroit Lions. We'll be back in a few short moments here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Before we went out to break, Joe, you were talking about the Denver Broncos selection at number 19. Florida State defensive end guy from Jacksonville, Florida, DeMarcus Walker. Sounds like DeMarcus Ware. Can he play like DeMarcus Ware?
He can. This is the best player on Florida State's defense last year. Florida State did not have a dominant defense, but they got better as the year progressed. DeMarcus Walker, 16.5 sacks, led that team. Physical player at the point of attack, physical in terms of run support as well, and he's a big body, Corey, 280 pounds, but he's quick of foot, has a great first step. I like him better than I like Derek Barnett at Philadelphia. I think he's going to be a better pro. I love this pick by Denver.
Is he going to be a better pro than that Cowboys Taco Charlton?
Yeah, I think DeMarcus, listen, I think when you look at DeMarcus Walker overall, he is a physical, intense football player. And you look at some of Florida State's biggest games, when they needed a sack or when they needed a stop, he stepped up. I love his game. I really do.
What do you think, Rich? Is he better than my guy in Big D now?
Yeah, I think he's better than Taco. Boy. I would disagree about Derek Barnett, but let me just dovetail off of what Joe said. Could not agree more. If you asked me prior to Thursday night, my three favorite players in the draft, DeMarcus Walker is clearly one of them. Now, he falls this far because he's a bit of a tweener at 6'4", 280. He can play a little inside. He could move outside. But pull out the tape of the Orange Bowl. Pull out the tape of any big game over the past couple of season. He is a force of nature at the point of attack. He will get to the backfield frequently. Motor never quits. Love this pick in the second round. Great value for the Broncos.
A couple of the latest picks with the 21st pick in the draft. The Detroit Lions select Florida cornerback Tez Tauber. Does he like that guy?
Yeah, Jalen Tabor. I mean, he was pitted as a first-round cornerback in this draft, but he ran a two slow 40s, one at the combine, one on his pro day, so he slips. And big games. I mean, didn't shut down Tennessee in the second half, but he is a top-flight corner. He's a great man-to-man guy. Like the pick, I just don't think he's an elite cornerback because of the speed factor, but he'll make Detroit much better in terms of pass coverage. And just to piggyback off that, I have to say, I love the pick by Miami, Raekwon McMillan.
Yep, linebacker.
I had him as a first-round pick. Love the pick. I'm a Dolphin fan, so very happy.
Raekwon McMillan from the Ohio State University goes to the Miami Dolphins. Then the latest pick, the New York Giants select 6'3", 310-pound Alabama tackle Dalvin Tomlinson. They must feed these dudes in Alabama grass. What the hell is going on with some of these heights and weights? This is unbelievable.
This is football, college football, 2017. I mean, you wouldn't believe the size of some of these players. Incredible.
Unbelievable. Wow. Got a lot of stuff to get through. When we come back on the other side, we start our second hour of coverage. We look at some of the best players on the board remaining. We'll get Jake Seeley from RotoExperts.com up. He'll help us break down some of these second round guys for fantasy football purposes. Having a good time right here in Studio 34. When we come back, the best players available and a little fantasy football talk with my guy, the all-in kid, Jake Seeley.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
They showed off their talents in Indianapolis. Now, they enter the city of brotherly love and find out where the next big fantasy football stars will call home. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network presents live coverage of the 2017 NFL Draft. The fantasy executive, Corey Parson, and team FNTSY are on the clock.
Hour number two of our live coverage of the second round of the NFL Draft going down right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're taking you up to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Got my guys with me from GoForTheTwo.com, Joe Lisi, Campus Insiders, Rich Sermonello. Already had some fireworks go down in the second round. We saw some of the top players on the offensive side that can help your fantasy rosters in 2017 go off the board, of course. Joe Mixon goes to the Cincinnati Bengals. We also get DeShone Kizer going to the Cleveland Browns. Want to reset right here and talk about some of the best skill position players still left on the board. Rich, I'm going to bring you in and starting right here, and I kind of want you guys to maybe give me a little quick ranking, give me some thoughts. At the wide receiver position, let's start with wide receiver. I got the best players available as Juju Smith-Schuster, Chris Goodwin, and Cooper Kupp, and Malachi Dupree. Those are the four right there.
Cooper Kupp sounds like a treatment one. For like an arthritic system or something. Yeah, I listen, are you looking for me to rank them? I would go. I like Godwin. We had this discussion a month ago. Ran the 4.42. Love the way he high balls throws. 50-50 balls are usually go into the win column for Godwin. I like the Penn State receiver. Cooper Kupp, highly productive. I think the only knock now is going to be, can you use him on the outside or is he strictly a slot receiver? He played at Eastern Washington, caught a ton of passes. Juju, listen, I liked him at USC, but I wonder if there's enough explosiveness. 6'1", 215 pounds. Does he have enough of separation speed to beat NFL defensive backs? That's why he's lasting this long.
See some of these pass catches going on out here, Joe. They're getting ready to go off the board and into the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with Godwin as being one of those guys. We discussed it in last month's show, yeah. But I have a problem with Cooper Kupp being as ranked as high as he is at this point in terms of the draft, second, third round. I think he's a fourth, fifth, possibly sixth round guy. Malachi Dupree, not a lot of production in LSU because of the quarterback situation with Danny Etling and former quarterback Brandon Harris, but he is an elite wide receiver. Make no mistake about it. You could even throw in Trayvon Doral in there. But there are a group of other wide receivers that are much higher on my list than those four. I mean, how about D.D. Westbrook? I mean, D.D. Westbrook, to me, should be mentioned there. He's got off-the-field issues. But if we're talking about play on the football field, D.D. Westbrook is a guy. Ryan Switzer's a guy from North Carolina. Isaiah Ford is another one. Josh Reynolds, Ricky Seals-Jones from Texas A&M, Bug Howard from North Carolina. I mean, these are all wide receivers, in my opinion, that I think are better than Cooper Kupp and Schuster at this point where we're ranking them. So have no problem with Dupree and Godwin, but the others I think are much higher.
I'm going to keep it with you right quick. It's interesting you say that about Kupp. Steve Smith Sr., right. Just retired. Right. During the combine, he said he felt that Kupp was a first-round talent and one of the best receivers in this draft.
Okay, and we go back to the combine. The problem with the combine for me is that we judge on the metrics on what we see at the combine, the physicality, but we're not equating it with the what we watch on the field against elite competition. And that's the one thing I said. If they want to judge the combine, have the players run the 40 with the football in their hands. Have the wide receivers break press coverage and then run the 40. So you can't just look at the combine. I mean, to me, Cooper Kupp is a solid wide receiver, but second, third round and going to be an elite pro day number one? Absolutely not. The players that I mentioned, I think, are more complete wide receivers that have better upside than Cooper Kupp at this point.
Now, here we go, Fantasy Sports Radio Network, rocking and rolling with you all the way up until 10 p.m. Eastern time. Going to break down some fantasy football talk with Jake Seeley in the next couple of moments. When we come back on the other side, ask him about some of the position players that went, get his thoughts on what they could do for fantasy owners in 2017. That is the all-in kid, Jake Seeley, coming up. Rich, when you look at the situation with Kupp and what Steve Smith said, do you agree with Joe?
Well, I don't think he's a fifth or sixth rounder. I think when you look at his production at Eastern Washington, yes, it is an offense that's similar to the air raid. They throw the ball a ton, but has good size, 6'2", 204 pounds, like his ball skills. If you ever want to YouTube Cooper Kupp, you'll see some amazing catches. So, but again, I think he fits in more as a slot receiver than an outside number one receiver. Quality player, probably third or fourth rounder.
All right, when we come back on the other side, the all-in kid, Jake Seeley, joins the program. We'll talk with him, get some of his thoughts on the situation. We're keeping it going right up to 10 p.m. East.
Do you want to?
All right, God. Back up in Adam, Studio 34. Good times going on right now. Joe Lisi, the celebrity. The paparazzi's after Joe Lisi right here in Studio 34. But right now, it's time to talk a little bit of fantasy football with my guy, the all-in kid, Jake Seeley. Got a lot of draft coverage going on this weekend right here on the network. But tomorrow at noon, very special event with Jake Seeley. We have our first experts fantasy football draft of the year. Myself, Jake Seeley, and Matt Madika hold down the microphones, and we see what the experts say after we get these results in from the 2017 draft. Jake, my man, what's going on, buddy?
Another busy night. I know you guys have to be enjoying it as much as I am.
Yeah. Well, Jake, it's just in the break just now, Jake. It just kind of went down in here. But we're not even going to talk about that. Jake, so what do you think? This conversation we were having before we went to the break at the bottom, you know, a little bit while ago about the best wide receiver left on the board. You got guys like Juju Smith-Schuster, not to mention the frack Chris Godwin, Cooper Kupp, and Malachi Dupree. Some of the names are Darius Stewart also. Some of the names is on the board right now. And what do you think about the wide receiver position as we continue to move through the second round and into the third round?
Now, I'm going to say basically what I said in my pre-draft article is you want to take Cooper Kupp or Darius Stewart, Chris Godwin, Zay Jones, Josh Reynolds, all the way down to Smith-Schuster and throw them in a hat and shake it together. It's really going to depend on the landing spot because there's such a fine line between each of them that I think it's really going to have to be the fit with the team. And it's similar. And I'm not saying any of them are on Michael Thomas's playing field, but what I was saying about for last year is Michael Thomas was the perfect fit for the Saints. As you know, Corey, that's why I kept saying he was going to be a wide receiver too. So these guys need to find the right fit because there's a huge drop off from the top three wide receivers that all went in the first round to everybody else. I'm a fan of Cooper Kupp. I'm also one of the bigger fans of Chris Godwin, but depending on the right situation, you can move them all around. For fantasy purposes, obviously what we're talking about here.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. When you draft college players, what system are they going to in the NFL? I mean, if they're going to go and they're going to have to learn a new offensive scheme and they're going to have to learn something that's not their strength, especially year number one, especially from a fantasy perspective, you're not going to get the type of productivity that you're looking for in terms of getting that fantasy points to win your league or win that week.
Exactly. Well, the perfect example to what you just said and the one that I throw out year after year is look at Jordan Matthews. Look at what they screwed around with him year after year, trying to get him to do things which he's not equipped for, not using him in a slot flanker role all the time, trying to push him outside, trying to make him run an offense he's not comfortable with. Jordan Matthews is a better player than what we've seen so far. Now, he's not one of the best in the league, but he's definitely better than what we've seen because he keeps getting screwed around with and not used to his ability. So you're 100% right. It really depends on the fit. And there are players who can develop into other other systems and learn in other systems. Otherwise, we would have half the players in college never succeed in the NFL. But this is up to the teams to learn that and figure that out on their own.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think when you look at it, he brought up Jordan Matthews. I mean, Jordan Matthews was the SEC all-time leading receiver when he came out of Vanderbilt and played in a spread offense. And then you look at the quarterback issues that Philadelphia's had over the last few years. I mean, now they have Carson Wentz, but, you know, he's developing. So as that progresses and that confidence in the passing attack progresses, you're going to see Jordan Matthews progress in the scheme and put up better numbers.
Rich, you out there?
Yeah, I sure am. I think it comes down to coaching personality. We talked about it with Bill O'Brien. You know, some coaches are rigid. Some coaches are inflexible. This is my system, my way or the highway. There are other coaches that are malleable. They're willing to adopt their principles toward the talent, toward the personnel, particularly if you're talking about a quarterback. So I think whether it's college or the NFL, it really comes down to the persona, the flexibility of a coaching staff to work with the personnel that they inherit.
Jake, let me
we talked about that earlier today. Just to circle back on that, we talked about the whole situation with Bill O'Brien and that he wants to go in with Tom Savage and he wants to force this difficult playbook that he always has and why it takes years for quarterbacks. And he said he's going to go fall on his sword and he wants to get to the playoffs with Tom Savage and all that type of thing. So his contract's up in 2018, and guess what? He might be hitting the streets because he doesn't win with Tom Savage and doesn't want to move to Deshaun Watson.
He decides he wants to fall on the sword. It's his business. He want to be hard-headed. That is his business. Speaking of being hard-headed, I don't know if it's the shoulder injuries, the fumbling, or the off-the-field concerns, but hard-headed issues caused Florida State running back Dalvin Cook to drop out of the first round. Jake, he goes with the 9th pick to the Minnesota Vikings. Latavius Murray already in place. Not the most intriguing offense being run out there in Minnesota by Pat Shurmur right now. What do you think of this fit, this selection? And I think this really has to dampen Dalvin Cook's fantasy outlook for 2017.
Oh, I think it dampens in comparison to another team where he would have been the lockdown lead option with a better offensive line. Now, the Vikings did improve their offensive line in the offseason, but they are also grabbing pieces from other teams that, you know, one being from the Lions that went in another direction to upgrade Ryle Reif. So you have to say, did they upgrade, but how much? I still think Dalvin Cook is going to lead this backfield. They signed Latavius Murray. I don't think the plan was to draft Dalvin Cook. I think they signed Latavius Murray with thinking we'll see what happens in the draft when Dalvin Cook was still there for him. I like the move. Dalvin Cook, I love his talent. I think people are too hung up on the combine for what he's done. If you just watch this kid play, this is sometimes where you're not always going to get the combine to sync up perfectly from what we've seen on tape. And he's one of the perfect examples for that. He's got the IQ. He knows how to set up defenders. He knows how to elude them when he can. He's got strength between the tackles. He's got good pass catching ability. He's really a complete running back. And I look at this and say, you know what, Latavius Murray, sorry, but that was a really quick window where you were the number one option on this team. Now, Latavius Murray is not going to completely fade into the background, but Jerick McKinnon is an afterthought at this point.
Oh,
I think Dalvin Cook from day one is an RB2. And if he does what I expect him to be able to do in this offense, even with not the best offensive line in football, I think he can be an RB1, and Latavius Murray's snaps are just going to continually go down and down and down, because as we've talked before, when he was with Oakland and the Raiders, he was a volume runner.
And especially those goal line carries also helped him out a lot. Jake, when you look at the next real guy that we were interested in, we've kind of felt that the Cincinnati Bengals would have been the landing spot for Joe Mixon. He does end up with the Cincinnati Bengals, 6'1", 226 running back out of Oklahoma. We know about the off-field stuff, but when you look at the situation that he goes into, you still got Jeremy Hill, you still have the young Giovanni Bernard, not to mention A.J. Green, the young man Boyd they drafted last year, Tyler Eifert, who can't really stay on the field. They take Ross in this year's draft, and it's kind of confusing me, like, what the hell are they trying to do?
Well, let's not forget a couple things here. Jeremy Hill, they soured on him. They pushed him down to number 3. There was talk about trading him the offseason.
Oh, that's right. They were running Burkhead last year. That's right. Yep.
Excuse me. I wouldn't be so surprised if they still move him in a trade. And if they don't, he's the number 3 option at this point. I think they've moved on from using him as a complimentary piece to Giovanni Bernard, who can't seem to stay healthy. I think that Joe Mixon comes in and, you know, it's kind of laughable. It's not like the Bengals have had a great success with off-the-field issue players. You know, go to the Pac-Man. Van Jones, he'll be a real stand-up example for Joe Mixon on this team. But you look at Mixon, I've said this time again, if you just talk about purely the player, which is what we have to do when we're talking about fantasy and just talking about this aspect of the game, we can get in that conversation at other times on other shows. But purely as a player, he was my top-rated running back. I think he was the most talented option in this draft. I think if you want somebody that could do every facet of the game, he's the one. And I think that similar to the situation with the Vikings, he's the best option from day one. Giovanni Bernard might be a little bit more in the pass-catching role next season if he can stay on the field. And I think Jeremy Hill is going to see 4 or 5 touches per game if he's still with them. So another one, I say Joe Mixon's a high-end RB2. And if he starts getting 20 touches per game, there's no doubt in my mind he's going to be an RB1. He's
Rich,
that talented.
I throw this one out to you and Jake, Rich, as we move forward and try to figure out what else is going to go on. When you look at some of the running backs to the left on the board still, Sam Perine, not to mention Alvin Kamara. When you look at the running backs to the left, Rich, who do you think are some of the top guys left on the board?
Well, you mentioned one of them in Alvin Kamara. I find him to be a fascinating study. Begins his career at Alabama, goes to Tennessee behind Jalen Hurd in Knoxville. But when he gets his opportunity to separate himself from those two programs, he shines. He shines brightly during the pre-draft process, leaps out of the building, good speed, good size. I think he's someone who can help a team very early in his career off the bench. And then what about Deontay Foreman? I mean, I think he's a little bit quicker. He's got a little more giddy up than people expect at his size. Rushes for 2,000 yards without a ton of support at Texas last year. So it's going to be really intriguing to see at what point a team pulls a trigger on Deontay Foreman.
What do you think, Jake?
Yeah, I like Foreman a lot. I think that he'd be a real good fit with the Packers as the power option. And that's the thing with Perine and Foreman, they're both power running backs and probably better suited to be one of these new backfields where you have a complementary piece, because I don't see them being involved in the passing game much at all. But the guy that I still like that I have rated higher than most, he was actually my number 5 running back of this draft class, is Jamal Williams. I think that he surprises a lot of people. I've seen more people come on to him late into this process. I don't think he'll go off the board before Perine and Foreman and probably Kamara, just because he doesn't get the attention everybody else does. But this is what I said in the draft package, and I'm sure you guys can appreciate this. It sounds tongue-in-cheek, but it's true. I say he has the Madden button moves. It's basically you can press Y and he's going to juke. You can press B, he's going to spin. You can press A, he's going to truck. He has everything you want with the moves to elude or get through defenders and break tackles, and he's got a high-end acceleration. I just really like this player, and I think he's also pretty adept in the passing game. He's not the best pass catcher in the game, but he's adept enough to be a 3-down player.
The all-in kid, Jake Sealy, thanks a lot for rocking with us. Head on over to rotoexperts.com right now. Jake is breaking it down for fantasy football purposes. Jake, my man, good luck tomorrow morning at noon Eastern time. We host the first fantasy football draft of the year. When we come back on the other side, I want to get Joe's take on the remaining running backs. Plus, we'll get you up to date on the latest action going down in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, as the NFL draft coverage continues. Getting deep into the second round of the NFL draft. Thanks for rocking with us coverage right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Rich Sermonello, Joe Lisi. Joe, we were talking about these running backs that remain on the board a little bit earlier before we headed out to break. Now I'm giving you your shot to break down what you think some of the top running backs are on the board and what you think they could bring to the next level.
Yeah, I have a couple of other guys outside of that list. I mean, I look at Wayne Gallman from Clemson. There's a guy that I really like the way he progressed. 1,500 yards a couple of years ago, led the team in rushing touchdowns 2 years straight, got better in terms of pass blocking. That'll help on the next level. And his ability in the short to intermediate passing game, really, if in the right fit, I think he could be a very productive running back. Has deceptive speed. Doesn't have that 4.4 40, but this kid's a gamer. I think he's a steal, second, third round. And I'll go with the guy that I've been saying all along as well, Kareem Hunt for Toledo. 44 total touchdowns, 4 year starter. He's a power running back, but he runs bigger than his size. He wears down opposing defenses. I like him over Jamal Williams, and I like both of those players in terms of being picked up right here, second, third round. And another guy, Marlon Mack from South Florida. Yep. Another downhill runner that I think will be a solid pro in years to come.
Let's get back to the draft board right quick with the 25th pick. Excuse me. The Houston Texans select Vanderbilt linebacker Zach Cunningham. Then we have the Seattle Seahawks taking LSU center Ethan Pokic. 6'6", 310. This is horrific. Then you have the the Kansas City Chiefs select Villanova defensive end. He's from Villanova.
Passagnol.
Then my Dallas Cowboys, America's team, the 5-time Super Bowl champion, Dallas Cowboys. They go to the secondary and in the camp. This guy right here, too.
Chidobe. They're killing you with the name.
Yeah, I know,
Corey.
Right?
You're just getting killed with
I'm getting
names.
Beat up over here, Rich. But
you figured after Sermonello you were done, right?
That's a good one right there. But, Rich, break it down for me. This young man from my Dallas Cowboys, 6 feet, 202 pounds, Colorado. We haven't had a decent play. I mean, Orlando Scandrick's a good player, and I think Byron Jones will be a good player. But other than that, the Dallas Cowboys have been missing on these secondary players. Here we go in the second round again, cornerback from Colorado.
Yeah, helping the defense now in the first two picks. Jadobe Owuzie, a very successful corner with the Buffs. Joe knows this. Colorado was fantastic defensively last year, almost airtight in the secondary. Jadobe was one of the big reasons why. He's not going to be the most athletic of the corners that we discuss, Corey, but extremely smart, great instincts, terrific ball skills. I think he's more steady than spectacular. I think you'll like him in Dallas.
Good. Yeah, I think he's a physical player, too. Yeah. I mean, the one thing, he might be a little stiff, like Rich mentioned, but he's physical, and he plays bump-and-run coverage, and he went up against elite wide receivers in the Pac-12. You talk about Colorado's defense. They held opposing offenses to 31% on third-down conversions. He's a big reason why. I love this pick. I mean, he's a lockdown corner and should be a solid pro.
Cowboys couldn't get off the field in the and against Aaron Rodgers in that divisional round game.
True.
And on third down, they give up third down play. So it's good to see that kind of gentleman come in with that kind of pedigree. The 29th pick of the second round, the Green Bay Packers select North Carolina State safety Josh Jones. And then this is intriguing right here, Rich, because we know how great it has been for Todd Haley in his NFL career. Nobody likes the guy, but he can develop receivers. We've seen Antonio Brown. We've seen Martavis Bryant. We've seen Terrell Owens, Larry Fitzgerald, Anquan Boldin. All these guys at some point have spent time under the tutelage of Todd Haley with the 30th pick in the draft. The Pittsburgh Steelers select USC wide receiver Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yeah, I don't think he needs a lot of development. I mean, if you watch Juju over the past three seasons, big, strong hands, Corey, very good ball skills. I thought he was extremely tough. There were times I watched him. He had injuries. He played through it. I think that kind of personality will fit very well in Pittsburgh. I think the organization will like him. But I think the one thing that Haley is not going to be able to teach is that explosiveness. I think what you see is what you get. He's going to be a solid player, but I don't think you're necessarily going to get him to go from here to here through coaching.
Yeah, I think Juju Smith-Schuster with Pittsburgh is a good fit. Yeah. He doesn't have to be a number one. He gets Antonio Brown to learn from another Mac wide receiver that learned and progressed and got better as a professional, and that'll help him. But then he's got younger wide receivers on that team as well. He's got Eli Rogers, he's got Sammy Coates, guys in their second and third year that will develop. Yeah. So the pressure isn't on Juju Smith-Schuster in this type of situation to be a number one.
Okay.
Whereas other USC wide receivers, when they were drafted as number one fill-ins, impact players immediately. And I think that in this type of scheme, he could have great success.
Rich, let me ask you, what do you think of those players that Joe mentioned? Because in fantasy communities, we're like, well, these guys have been underachievers. I'm talking about Eli Rogers and Sammy Coates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, listen, Coates was a player that I liked during the Auburn days, not just in terms of what he did on the field, but I always thought he'd be a really strong community guy. Had a chance to meet him a couple of years ago, had really taken a liking to a young, sick kid. He's kind of a complete player, student athlete, on field, off field. Obviously, fantasy owners could care less about that. But Sammy hasn't developed up to the expectations that I thought. Had the physical skills, but was a little bit inconsistent even back at the Auburn days, and obviously that has trickled into what he's done on Sundays.
Yeah, I think he's gotten better as a pro, though, if you watch him. He's starting to get it. And okay. I think that now you're going to see a breakout year from him. I really do. I think
it's coming.
I think it is. I think now he was a raw wide receiver in Auburn. Him and Duke Williams were two wide receivers. They were both 6'3". They were both physical guys. You couldn't double-team both of those guys at the same time, so he had success. But he has great leaping ability. He's got great hands. And I think he's due for a breakout season. I think the more success Antonio Brown has just helped Sammy Coates, and now you add Juju Smith into that offense. I think he could put up dynamic numbers. I really do. I think he could be a 900 to 1,000 yard wide receiver in that offense.
Interesting take right there. The 31st pick of the draft goes to the Buffalo Bills. They are on the clock. And then the 32nd pick of the second round and of the final pick of the second round goes to the Carolina Panthers. I don't know, Rich. You think Carolina keeps continuing to go to try to do something to make this offense more productive? I mean, really, this offense runs through Greg Olsen. And Greg Olsen is a tight end and he's an older gentleman.
Yeah, listen, I think you got McCaffrey, you got Curtis Samuel, you have versatile playmakers who can obviously run the ball on the ground. They're terrific receivers, they're experienced receivers. I think you have to look on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, you know, a couple of guys that surprised me that are still out there right now. Tim Williams, if you need to get some pressure on the backfield, every NFL team wants to ratchet up the pressure. Tim Williams from Alabama, situational type guy, Vic Beasley type of a talent. Little surprised. I guess that's the theme. Alabama in general, going back to last night, a lot of their players have slipped.
Yeah, off the field issues. That's right. That's the only reason for Tim Williams. I mean, Ryan Anderson went before him, outside linebacker. Tim Williams and Ryan Anderson both second on the team with 9 total sacks last year. So an edge rusher that could be a situational player in third down situations. So he should have been a first or a second round pick. Now we're towards the end of the second round. I would be shocked if he doesn't get picked up in the third round here.
Another gentleman that is still sitting out there is a defensive end from Kansas State. That is Jordan Willis. When you talk about Jordan Willis, big time player at K-State, what do you think about him, Rich? Jordan Willis and Jordan Willis, is the gentleman that I'm asking you about.
Yeah, the defensive end. I think his production in the Big 12, Corey, is going to continue in the NFL. I mentioned, you know, a couple of players that I really like, a couple of players that I think will be better than where they're drafted. Jordan Willis will be one of those guys. He's got kind of an odd body type. He's not the long, lean defensive end that we're normally accustomed to, but extraordinarily productive at the college level. Worked out well. Again, great motor. Won't quit until the whistle. I like Jordan Willis. I hope Joe does as well.
Nah, you know I was down on Kansas State, but Jordan Willis was the best player on that defensive staff. I mean, 10.5 sacks, led the team in sacks. He is a bit undersized, but he's great in run support, plays with a motor, and I think he's not going to be an elite defensive end. He's going to be a solid pro that's going to be just a guy that makes plays each and every week, but is he going to be that DeMarcus Ware game changer? No. But okay. He'll be that complement player on the opposite end that just wraps up and makes tackles each and every Sunday, and he's going to be a great fit in that type of scheme.
Is a guy like,
and we don't talk about it a lot, but certain guys are just good fits for locker rooms too. Again, I know that doesn't necessarily, you know, translate into stats and fantasy and stuff like that, but a Jordan Willis, those types of players, I think makes teammates better. He's just that type of a guy.
Glue guys, I like to call them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, guys, exactly.
Good to have in the locker room. You know what I mean? They make good teammates, good guys to have in the locker room as they mature and progress. They also can help younger players. Another defensive end I want to ask you about, Joe, Deshaun Hall, the DN from Texas A&M.
Love him. Mm-hmm. Love him. I think, and I brought this up once, you know, when JPP got drafted in 2010, he never got a lot of fanfare because George Selvey from Dallas was getting all the fanfare as the top 10 pick. And then it came to the Giants and JPP. Deshaun Hall is a guy that has a huge wingspan, 6'5", about 255, second in the team behind Myles Garrett last year with 4.5 sacks, 7.5 the year before, total of 11.5 sacks the last couple of years. He's getting better as a football player, especially in run support. And I'm going to say it first, he's got a bigger upside, in my opinion, than Myles Garrett. I love Deshaun Hall.
Oh, my God.
I do. I love him. I love him.
Oh, Rich, you okay?
He fell off the chair.
Yeah, no, I need a defibrillator after that comment.
Here we go. When we come back, we having some good times right now. We are getting ready. We've already wrapped up the second round of the NFL draft. The last picks of the round two of the NFL draft. The Buffalo Bills take 6'4", 313-pound guard from Temple, Deion Dawkins. The Carolina Panthers select another guard from Western Michigan, 6'5", 319, Taylor Moten. We'll break down some of the action on those players. Plus, I want to go back to the first round, having a good time talking about some of these defenders. I know we don't really do the defenders for fantasy purposes, but I want to get their takes on some of these defenders that went in the first round. But we'll talk about these last two offensive linemen to go to end the second round. We're rocking and rolling with Fantasy Football Frenzy right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. NFL Draft Special Night 2. Pair of offensive guards go off the board to end the second round of the NFL draft. Round three getting ready to start. You're listening to the Fantasy Football Frenzy NFL Draft Special Edition Night 2. Joe Lisi, Rich Sermonello, Fantasy Executive Corey Parson. Rich, let me jump right in here. Let me ask you a question. Deion Dawkins, offensive guard, goes to the Buffalo Bills, joins that offensive line, run blocking, grading up those holes for LeSean McCoy. 6'4", 314, Deion Dawkins out of Temple.
Yeah, I hate to paint with a broad brush. I think we do this sometimes with programs, but there's a personality. There are traits that come out of certain programs. They call it Temple tough. We saw it with Hassan Reddick. We've seen it with the Tyler Matakeviches and Mo Wilkerson over the years. And Deion Dawkins is that type of a blocker, a real road grader. Temple guys in the trenches are always tough. They're always physical. They always play to the whistle. Deion Dawkins is one of those types of kids, and it's really a credit to what has taken place over the years, whether it was Al Golden or Steve Adazio, and most recently Matt Rhule. They continue to send players to the NFL.
Let me tell you, these Temple players, they like to fight.
They do. They're Philly. Philly strut. Yeah, yeah. Your brother. Yeah, there you go, that's right what there. It's all about. And these aren't, we're not talking about five-star recruits coming from, you know, Louisiana and Texas and then going
hungry
to Temple. Right, yep. Exactly. These are kids that are under the radar kids that have been developed by the coaching staff, so they've had to fight to win these jobs.
Yep.
And that's the thing, they haven't come in as entitled five-star recruits and been given, you know, the starting position right from the time they walk out of high school.
Yep.
So these kids have competed to get to where they are, and that's why they are productive pros. And that's not to take away from the five-star recruits LSU and Alabama, that's not what I meant. It's just that when you get a kid under the radar and they have to fight for that starting position, it carries through to the NFL, especially when they make it.
Sometimes you got to sleep on the park bench.
Exactly.
There
right.
You go right there. Carolina Panthers take this final pick of the second round. They also go on the offensive line from Western Michigan, Rich, Tyler Moten.
Yeah, it was more than just Corey Davis. It was more than just Zach Terrell for P.J. Fleck last year. They really had some big bodies on the offensive line. Taylor Moten, 6'5", 320 pounds, skilled blocker. You know, I think we've seen a theme over the first couple of rounds, even into this first pick of the third round with Larry Ogunjobi from UNC Charlotte. A lot of small school players. Joe brought up a really good point that I'd like to just tap into. You know, again, again, no offense to those five-star kids, but boy, when you have come from two-star, when you're a walk-on, someone who is barely getting a scholarship, I think there's a little extra heart. There's a little extra intensity and passion and appreciation. We've seen that in a lot of kids outside of the Power Five conferences.
Yeah, and to piggyback off that with Western Michigan, I mean, they had a solid offensive line. Another guy, a guard that is up-tempo offense. He got better as the games progressed, his conditioning, and you see the progression from the MAC conference now going to the pros. Guys like Antonio Brown, Eric Fisher from Kansas City. These are all MAC players. Khalil Mack, Thomas Rawls. They've had great success in the NFL. So now you're seeing more and more smaller players from the MAC make it into the, how about Jactavius Brown from San Diego? These were all MAC players that were elite players within the conference that have carried their game to the next level. And the NFL teams are reaping the rewards of that hard work.
San Francisco 49ers with the second pick, Joe, of round number three. They get a cornerback from Colorado, 6'3", 198, Mr. Weatherspoon.
Yeah, he's another guy. He's a tall corner, 6'3", but another guy that can play bump and run coverage from Mike McIntyre. You look at Mike McIntyre's defense. Mm-hmm. Mike McIntyre was the secondary coach for the New York Jets, so he understands defensive backs. This is a guy that coached up his secondary. I love the pick here, especially when you look at what San Francisco's done now. Yep. They got Reuben Foster, Solomon Thomas, and now a lockdown corner to play in a passing conference. I think they're great here. I love what John Lynch has done. And again, a football mind, a former football player that understands how to build football teams. Love the pick here.
Rich, here we go. We're starting to get some pieces for Kyle Shanahan and his new team.
Mm. Yeah, not on the offensive side, but defensively, three in a row. I look at Akello Witherspoon, reminds me of Kevin King, who we talked about at the beginning of the broadcast, first pick of the second round, long, lean, athletic. You know, not just Mike McIntyre, but Jim Leavitt, the defensive coordinator of Colorado, who is now at Oregon, did a remarkable job coaching up that Colorado talent. And this isn't going to be the last Buffalo defensive back that's going to be drafted. You know, Tedrick Thompson, the safety, is still out there as well. So, you know, Colorado, what we saw last year, they win their division, surprisingly, win the Pac-12 South. We're now starting to see the caliber of players that led that title run.
We got the New Orleans Saints on the clock with this third pick of the third round. I believe they got that from San Francisco via trade. I'm pretty certain. I think, if I'm not mistaken, San Francisco was supposed to have the second and third pick. The Saints are on the clock now. So that pick more than likely came from the San Francisco 49ers. New Orleans Saints on the clock. And here we go. The pick is in the New Orleans Saints. So the New Orleans Saints just keep adding running backs to the team.
Well, they got Kamara. I'll tell you exactly how they're going to utilize him. In the short to intermediate passing game, screen games, they're going to put him out in the slot. He's an excellent pass catcher, and that's where he is a dynamic. He's a player in space. And again, that's the type of offense that you say, well, Christian McCaffrey with Carolina, this is a perfect fit for Alvin Kamara, because I think he's going to put up great numbers in the passing game. Forget the rushing stats. It's going to be in the passing game where he's most effective in Peyton's offense.
So Rich, let's kind of forget about Adrian Peterson because he's a one-down player at this point. Mm-hmm. But you still got Mark Ingram there. Mark Ingram is a good player, maybe an underrated back. Doesn't really get that 300 touch, maybe a 200 touch a back. Now you bring a guy like Kamara in here. What do you think Sean Payton is exactly trying to scheme up here?
It's an ideal situation for Mark Ingram. You know, you're not going to shoulder the load at this point. You want to be able to spread out the carries a bit. Mark Ingram is more of a north-south, between the tackles, low leverage type of running back. And now you bring in, you know, a little bit of flash in Alvin Kamara, a little bit of versatility in Kamara. Doesn't have a lot of mileage, which I like. We always worry about running backs once they get to this stage. How many years can we get out of them? How many touches can we get out of them? Well, if you look at Alvin Kamara during his college career, he was never a feature back. So this is someone who should be clean in terms of health, tested very well. I think he's got a good future, and I think there's a lot of different ways you could use him, including potentially as a return man on special teams.
Yeah, great point. Again, he's a little short. He's 5'10". Yeah, and Rich brought up a great point in terms of the constant pounding. I mean, the fact that he hasn't played, he backed up Jalen Hurd and really had great success with Josh Dobbs in the short to intermediate game in terms of the passing attack and screens.
Yeah.
He killed Texas A&M in the screen game in that game in College Station. So he's got breakaway speed as well. I mean, if he gets space, he's gone. So that's the one thing when you look at Kamara. His game, especially in the wide open New Orleans type of offense with Drew Brees at the quarterback position. I mean, I think it's a great fit. Again, one concern that I would have, pass blocking. Yeah. This isn't a guy that's going to stand up to the durability in terms of pass blitzing defensive ends. He's a little bit undersized. Dalvin Cook, a more, I want to say, physical specimen over Alvin Kamara.
Let me ask you about, I wanted to bring a circle back and bring it back to Adrian Peterson right quick. In today's NFL, especially a running back that runs out the single set, they don't really do a lot of that, so more or less he's a one down player. Why bring a guy like AP in? What's the purpose for bringing him in?
I think you're looking for lightning in a bottle. I think you're looking at a position that you cannot have enough running backs on a roster because look at Green Bay.
Yep.
They had Eddie Lacy.
They had a wide receiver out there.
They had to put Ty Montgomery there. Now, I think Ty Montgomery's a great fit as a running back. He's a bigger wide receiver than he was. He was about 215 in college. But again, you can never have enough running backs. So if you start the year with Ingram as your guy, he's battled injuries over the course of his career. We'll go to Adrian Peterson. If that doesn't work, you have Kamara. But you can never have enough running backs in today's NFL, especially when injuries mount up, especially if you're going to a playoff run. You need the running game.
I think Hightower is still on the roster, too. I have to look into that. Jacksonville Jaguars are on the clock, Rich, with the fourth pick of round number three. In round number one, the Jacksonville Jaguars selected Leonard Fournette, stud running back out of LSU. Now, I was kind of the opinion where, you know what, they could have filled some other pieces. I think Fournette was like a guy that would have been better for like a running back on a win-now type team. Jacksonville, obviously not in that situation. Right. But then again, maybe Tom Coughlin does think that Jacksonville is kind of in win-now mode. They have T.J. Yeldon on the roster and Chris Ivory, but I still think Leonard Fournette comes in here and he is the lead dog.
Well, listen, there's no better back on the roster in Jacksonville than Leonard Fournette at this point. It's going to be interesting to see what Fournette do you get. If this is a 100% healthy Leonard Fournette, you have the potential to have the next Adrian Peterson. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he has that type of build, that type of build-up speed. You look at the measurables, he reminds a lot of people of Adrian Peterson, has that potential. He's going to be a great community guy, good kid, clean off the field, but he has not been durable. He's a big target. He doesn't, you know, he's not going to outrace people in space. He takes a lot of hits. That's my big concern. At number four, do you take a running back who's had a hard time staying on the field over the past couple of years?
I like the pick. Yeah. I think he's going to be a dominant pro. I think it's when you look at the progression of Jacksonville's offense with Blake Bortles, they need to run the football consistently, especially when they have a lead to shorten games. I don't think this is an elite, high-powered offense. Yeah. They can't get into shootouts on a consistent basis with some of the better teams in their division, and they can't win that way. They need to shorten games and run the football. And I think you're seeing a little bit of Tom Coughlin in there as well. Yeah. He wants to run the – he understands how to win. But, again, you're going to have to run the football consistently. Yeldon's a solid back, but now you add Leonard Fournette to that mix.
Yeah.
He's going to wear down opposing defensive fronts this year. I think he's a 1,000-yard rusher easy.
Tom Coughlin adds Dwayne Smoot, defensive end from Louisville. Rich, 6'3", 264. Dwayne Smoot is the pick for the Jacksonville Jaguars. The 68th pick overall in the 2017 NFL draft.
He got lost in Champaign, Corey, because that happens to a lot of Fighting Illini players these days. It's hard to really distinguish yourself in the Big Ten from a school like Illinois, which has been a perennial loser over the past decade, but he's a quality pass rusher. I think he's the kind of kid that could put his hand in the dirt. He could be a stand-up defensive end. I think he has enough athleticism to possibly drop back into coverage, blanket a tight end, but he's best going north and south. Enjoyed watching him during his Illini career. It's a good pick by the Jacksonville Jaguars. Little higher than I thought, but a nice career at Illinois.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's a one-dimensional player in terms of, I don't think he's solid in run support. Mm-hmm. I think he's a situational type of player where he's an edge rusher and a defensive end in that type of system. He's not a first or a second down defensive end, in my opinion. I think he's a situational type of player because of his weaknesses in run support. So is he going to be a guy that you're going to play with every single week in terms of start to finish? No. And again, I think he's a reach here. Adam is a fifth-round pick in this draft.
Couple minutes left to go in the program. We're taking you up to 10 p.m. Eastern time. No, right here. Coming to you live from Studio 34, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. The L.A. Rams on the clock. Let me ask you, Rich. In fantasy circles, we kind of were disgusted with Todd Gurley last year. I came into the season thinking, listen, I don't care about no weapons around him. I don't care that he's the only piece. I don't care how crazy Jeff Fisher is. Todd Gurley is so good that he's going to get the job done, and last season he did not.
Yeah, no, I'm always careful about talking about Georgia ex-Georgia players in front of Joe Lisi. I'm sure he might go after my throat. But listen, I like Todd Gurley. Had an off year, obviously, but you know, I love the way he runs with violence, runs with physicality. Again, quick and great size. I would expect to see him this year recapture the form that he had in his rookie season. Just too good for that not to happen.
Joe, we're coming up. You got to get ready to hit one of our breaks. But your guy just went to the Rams, Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, I think it's a reach here. I really do. I mean, again, they need wide receiver help. Yeah. I think it can't hurt, but I think they could have gotten other players that would have filled this void. Not sold on Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, this is not your guy, huh? When we come back on the other side, we'll break down Cooper Kupp a little bit. We'll tell you about our draft tomorrow, and we will say goodnight from Studio 34 in New York City. Final couple minutes of the program, taking you up to 10 p.m. Eastern time at the top of the hour. Episode 3 of Red Heat and Rage. That is Cam Stewart and Gabe Morrissey doing good things right now on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. That is Red Heat and Rage, Episode 3. Rich, the Los Angeles Rams have, with the addition of Kupp, they have 10 wide receivers on their roster. Robert Woods, Mike Thomas, Nelson Spruce, Brandon Shippen, Marquise North, Paul McRoberts, Bradley Marquez, Farrell Cooper, and Tavon Austin. This is pitiful.
It's like the island of misfit wide receivers out there with the Rams. Right? Listen, I'm not going to go hog wild about Cooper Kupp. You know, I know Joe doesn't like him, but I think he's a solid receiver. I'll say it again. The key is, where do you play him? Can you accentuate his skill set? You put him in the slot. He's got a decent body at 6'2", 205. Excellent hands, acrobatic, tremendous ball skills. If you put him in a position to thrive, don't put him on the outside. He's just not athletic enough. Slot receiver, big slot receiver. I think he could have a successful career with the Rams.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'll say this about those wide receivers. The best wide receiver, in my opinion, on that roster is Nelson Spruce. He's going to be a second-year guy from Colorado. Led the whole Colorado Buffaloes all-time leading receiver. Watch out for him in year number two. But with Cooper Kupp, you need to put dynamic playmakers on the outside, speed guys.
Yeah, like Tavon Austin.
Right, to give Jared Goff weapons. Mm. He, to me, is a possession wide receiver. I mean, I can't imagine why you wouldn't want to go with a burner on the outside that has played in better competition to get the immediate impact. That's what I don't see.
How about D.D. Westbrook, Joe?
No, but that's what I'm saying,
Westbrook,
right?
Maybe would have been
a guy that can take the top off the defense as opposed to another possession receiver is not going to help that offense, and more importantly, not going to take the pressure off of Todd Gurley in the offensive line, because they're just going to put 8 in the box
again
and force Jared Goff to throw over the top, and that's why I don't like the pick. Has nothing personally against Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
It's just that I think he's a fourth or a fifth round draft.
No, his parents are listening, but they're fine with it. We had a good time doing this tonight, gentlemen. Good time.
Awesome.
No doubt. We'll be back with you 10 a.m. on Sunday morning. Recap the whole thing. Myself, Corey Parson, Rich Sermonello, Joe Lisi. Good time tonight, fellas. I really enjoyed it. This was excellent.
Love the show, guys. Anytime. This is what it's all about.
Thank you, Rich. I appreciate you being here with me tonight, bro.
Thank
you're not
you,
live
we'll
in studio.
We'll talk again on Sunday morning, buddy.
Yeah, no, still, I'm glad you're here. Tomorrow at
I'm
noon.
There in spirit.
Yes, thank you, brother. Tomorrow at noon, we have our first fantasy football experts draft hosted by myself, Jake Seeley, and Matt Matica. So make sure you check in tomorrow at noon. The first fantasy football experts draft of 2017 NFL doing their drafts. We got to do ours too. Coming up next on the network is Red Heat and Rage with Cam Stewart and Gabe Morrissey. Two lunatics. So they
love Gabe. Gabe is one of a kind.
Yes. Yes, he certainly is. So make sure you stay tuned for that right now. Want to thank everybody for rocking with us. Want to thank my man Chris Pavona for keeping me in flow, in tune the entire night. Noon tomorrow, the first Fantasy Football Experts Draft. We're out. Thanks for rocking with us.